Blog Talk Radio.
The motherfucking saga continues.
Yo, yo, what's up, world? It's Badass Thuggin' like I usually do. And you better turn it up, bust some speakers out, cause we off the motherfucking cuff. You dig how we do it? Dog Pound Gangsters 2000 and beyond.
What's up with it, John? Man, don't change that sound. This your player partner, the legendary Cocaine. And you tuned in live to Off the Cuff Radio. Better not touch that down. Wiggling.
Yeah, yeah, this is Cassidy the Hustler. And right now, you listening to the Guillotine. Show them the respect they deserve, man. Off the Cut Radio, man. Y'all already know how they doing it, man. I need y'all to stay tuned. They've been doing it for years. So show them the respect they deserve. And you heard it out of bars, mom. Easy.
Keep it moving like this. Yo, this your boy Rampage. You're not rocking with the best. With Off the Cut Radio. Classic. History. Fix your face to all you haters. We off the cuff, baby.
What's up, everybody? This your girl, Bonnie Dollars, the queen of trap, representing Crenshaw, and you are now tuned in with Off the Cuff Radio. What's up?
What's up, y'all? This is Miss Irresistible, giving a shout-out to the live show on Friday nights, Off the Cuff Radio, and I'm live from the 704. Make sure y'all tune in for the blazing hot music.
What it ain't, what it do. Chilly Chill from that original Lynch Mob. Off the Cuff Radio, always where it's at on Friday night. West West, y'all.
Excuse me, sister, but your lace front isn't laid down right. Well, brother, peace, God. How you doing? How you doing?
They called you a doll and I realized they had it backwards. You a god, no facade. You must understand that your culture freedom is one true way of life. And that power is truth and truth is life. Any bondage, don't be no fool. Be fruitful and multiply. This earth wants you captivate your moon. And when you talk five, speak of 85 high. That which has been refined must be divine. Elevate your foundation, control your mobility. Build, destroy, destroy, build. In order to build, you must destroy all negativity. Your 2020 plus your third keep you from that edge. Maker, owner, cream of the planet, we walk that ledge. 120, 120, uno, dos, zero. Asiatic black man, zig, 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 zag, zag, zig, zag. Peace to the gods.
Yeah, niggas to gods. Niggas to gods, that's right. Yeah, niggas to God.
Now see, a God handle his finances.
God.
A nigga take chances. I can't determine what's in a man's mind. I'm just trying to get right with mine. There used to be boundaries to nigga shit. Certain shit you didn't do. You just didn't want to. For instance, what would make a nigga desecrate a man's grave? See, that's the nigga you can't save. Explain to me your thought process. What part of you you thought would bring success? You better have a metal chest or a head that can withstand any caliber. And when you come down off that high and you at home with your family, remember it's casualties of war.
Everybody.
So if they hit Junior and they bury him under roses and petunias, I'ma say less. I'm an old nigga, but it's one thing I figure. I can navigate Vietnam and I won't get myself smashed off the ground.
Yeah, we want the best part of this earth. Niggas to God. Yeah, let's shine, let's build. That's right, niggas to gods.
Better know.
That's right.
Come on, right.
Let's bring niggas, man. Niggas to gods.
And in due time, I became an army of one.
One.
My regrets, none.
Not one.
From niggas to gods requires a total transformation, a mind cleanse. And I might lose some so-called friends. That's the price.
Right.
And no, I'm not here to give advice. My role got blinders and a whole bunch of reminders of what works and what don't. And if we meet at the mountaintop, I'ma say you got here, my nigga. And if you follow the father, I'ma say peace, God. I'm trying to get generations. generational wealth. I'm way past myself and all my energy to my daughter. You see how they fucking with these borders? In 20 years we gonna be fighting over water. Peace, God, the original man. Don't die in the quicksand.
Yeah, yeah. Black niggas to God.
Let's feel inequality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Spread love to my brothers.
God.
Mind right, teach our babies. Protect our queens.
Let's bring niggas to God.
Raise our seeds.
That's right.
All right, all right. We are now tuned in at episode 533 of Off the Cuff Radio. I'm your host, King Eric, the Media Assassin, and this show is sponsored by Cocaine Buddy Boy Entertainment, Da Vinci Clothing, Fleetwood and the Cotton Pickers, Core Financial, Jesse Boutique. Got my co-host, T-Max, with the facts on the line. What's good, brother?
What's going on, man? Peace and love to the black of the universe. This is T-Max, the co-pilot next to the head pilot of this Soul Fly Fresh Frequency of OTC on a TNT Thursday Night Tremendousness. And King, we have a legendary luminary of hip-hop royalty on the show tonight. Please let everybody know who we got on.
Now, you know, before we do that, man, first of all, we want to send a rest in peace tribute to Granddaddy Ayu, who passed away yesterday. He was a good supporter of the show, and we want to dedicate this show, most importantly, to him and his memory, man. Thank you for everything that you've done for Off the Cuff Radio. Big shout-out to Pittsburgh Pat for making that connection happen.
Yes, man. And one thing about it, King, this is why we do what we do. Of course, we got to send a rest in peace, of course, to DJ Twitch, too, with the Ellen DeGeneres show as well. Represent the culture. You know, this is what we do, man. We're blessed enough to be able to do this, of course, with our co-host, you know, a lot of Sandman, Lady Chinchilla, you know, and Pat, of course, and so many others that help bring Off the Cuff Radio to be what it is in terms of not only being at the forefront of hip-hop journalism, but also a living recording history of the legend that come on this show, that, and some of whom we've lost over the years. This is our way of honoring the culture, giving back, respecting, and most important, you know, simply giving appreciation to a culture that has meant so much to so many around the world and has done so much for us, you know, that has enabled us to do what we do with it. Life's crazy, man. You just never know. You always want to show flowers.
And, you know,
and give.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And speaking of showing flowers, man, on the lighter note here, this is indeed a special show because this man right here,
yes, it is.
It's a part of the legendary group Brand Nubian. You heard the classics, In God We Trust, Everything Is Everything, and over 12 albums, including the most recent title, Science of Life, which we will be talking about tonight, along with talk about what he got going on with his legacy going forward. And in the song we just played, Diggers the Gods, bringing that heat from that album. Be sure you get it on streaming platforms. Let's all welcome Sadat X to Off the Cuff Radio.
Yeah. Peace. Yo, what's the deal, man? Sadat X, I'm here on the check-in.
Man,
what is good,
God,
my man?
Dude, this is, man.
Everything is good.
Man, Sadat, this is an honor and a privilege, man. Once again, we have another living legend on the show. I mean, we're just too blessed to be able to be doing something like this, man. I mean, thank you for coming on.
No question. I'm getting ready to lay it down. Got to go to work, but I'm here. I wanted to chop it up with y'all for a little while first.
Man, look, we appreciate you so much. I guess we're going to get right into it, man. Obviously, Sadat, your presence in hip-hop, you know, as a solo artist with Brand Nubian, it's indelible, it's impeccable, it's incredible, and not in that order. When you look at what you've done over 30 years as a group member and a solo artist and still contributing, still having a love for the culture, how do you stay inspired in terms of what's still, you know, from when you first started and where you're at now, how do you still have that fire that burns inside of you for the creative catharsis that allows you to compose such classic compositions?
Well, I guess, man, I'm still a fan of hip hop. You know, I still love beats. I still love to hear, you know, somebody kick some fire over beats, man. Like I'm still passionate, you know, about hip hop, man. I still got a burning desire for it. I still love it. You know, even if I wasn't doing it at this capacity, I would be doing it somehow, just rhyming or, you know, for myself or whatever. But like, I still have a genuine love for hip hop. That's why I still do it.
And going on to Science of Life, man, like, this project here is straight fire, man. And how is this any different from your previous solo projects?
Well, you know, I guess this time, you know, I got some, you know, a little younger influence on it. You know, I reached out to some of my younger peoples. I got a Crime Apple, a Knowledge Pirate, a TFJ Worthy. You know, some got a little newness to it, man, and you know, just wanted to keep it fresh. When I was doing this project, I wasn't really listening to too much rap because I didn't want to subconsciously be influenced by anything, and I wanted to make an album that was somewhat congruent, meaning that I wanted something that could, that one song could play into the other song, and you could kind of feel the songs together having a purpose, whereas just putting out songs rhyming. You know, I've done that before. Anybody can just put out a whole bunch of songs rhyming. I wanted to make something concise, something I believe, you know, some of these kids and artists and different artists say, I did 27 songs, I did 23. That's way too much, man. I don't care who it is. I'm not listening to nobody for 23 straight songs. You know, I wanted to do an album that, if it was too short, it was a rewind. You could listen to it and rewind it. You can get a working out on it in the gym. I wanted it to be that proper length, man. I didn't want it to be too long.
Understood. And brevity is everything in terms of you want to be able to have, like you said, a cohesive project that doesn't overrun or overwhelm the listener. You want it to be something compact, something complete, immaculate, and, you know, simply, you know, easily digestible. When you look at how the game started years ago, what inspired you to start rhyming in terms of, and tell us about that hip-hop scene back then in terms, because you all were on the forefront, and
yeah,
you still maintain that integrity and that intelligence today, you know, of that wisdom, you know, the 5%, the nation of the gods and earth, you know, black pride, all the elements of black culture, which is vast, which is diverse, which is beautiful. Going into the late 80s, you know, you all were part of that wave of the Afrocentric, you know, artistry, you know, along with KRS, you know, X-Clan, you know, Public Enemy, you know, all of you collectively were just bringing a essence to the culture that was needed in that energy of positivity. What was it like starting out for you in terms of what inspired you to rhyme and then being part of such a classical era of hip-hop history?
Well, you got to look at, you know, first of all, it wasn't as much social, well, it wasn't no real social media like it is now. So in order for you to mm-hmm. do something, you had to be out there doing it. You know, you had to,
right.
You had to basically go to the studio, mm-hmm. or you had to deal with people face-to-face. You understand? It was more personal. You know, everything was more personalized, like, you know, like whatever you was talking about in rap and doing this, you had to have some sort of factualness behind it. Like, you know, rap is always storytelling and you know, movie like soundtrack is, if you want to say, but it always had an element of realism to it behind it. You know what I'm saying? Like, you actually believed this person, and when you saw him, like, you knew halfway that they had to really be talking about somewhat about, you know, what they was talking about, or else they'd be checked on it, you know, whereas nowadays, today, man, it's a lot different, man. Like, back then, we had A&Rs, you understand? We had A&Rs, people there, mm-hmm. the Chris Lighties, the Maddie and Scott Free, a lot, people that would groom you, so when you got in front of a microphone or a camera, you didn't come off as stupid. You had people that wouldn't let you go on screen high and falling over stuff in the studio and breaking the equipment and just coming off in buffoonery. You understand? You had some people that would polish the edges up, you know? So that was basically, you know, the upbringing that I saw. I saw from the grassroots, coming from outside, you know, the passion, being tight with your lyrics, you understand? Being able to rhyme on the spot, you know, like all those was taken into the craft.
Absolutely. Like you said, Sadat, also too during that era, like you said, social media was pretty much it was non-existent during that time.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, look, 1989, debut, Brand Nubian. This is 1 year after the Source magazine starts. This is a few years after Rap City. It's about a couple years after Rap City starts and you're on TV Rap. So
yeah.
This is like a whole new essence, you know, once for all, where you all are, you know, coming into the video. Well, the Video Age of Hip Hop had already been going for a few years, but we had two shows that were primarily posting up with it, and then a magazine publication that was really becoming a legend in its own of covering this. So you all were coming in at a time where the media game for hip-hop culture was changing. And as that time progressed, because Gangsta Rap was right on the precipice of really beginning to come out. Cube would drop America's Most Wanted that in 1990, mm-hmm. a year later. So
yep.
This is like a confluence of all different types of cultures in terms of a paradigm shift. What was it like just in the industry in terms of what was going on at that time of getting signed, in terms of the musical direction, even down to how videos were shot?
Well, you know, like back then, videos was big productions then. You know, you'd have the video trucks and the trailers and, you know, and or just a whole bunch of people there. And it was really a big production, you know, like if you were lucky enough to be on a label back then. Definitely not now how it is now, how you can just shoot it with one single camera and damn near do it in an hour and it's done, and then fine-tune it and put it out the next day if your people work fast enough. So on that level, you know, it was definitely more of a production back then. And I don't know, man, it was just like a, but it was a great era, man, because like even though you had these certain, you had West Coast and East Coast, I mean, we've done shows, and I miss these type of shows. We don't do these type of shows anymore. We did shows I remember doing a show, it was us, it was the Ghetto Boys, it was the Jungle Brothers, MC Breed, and Yo-Yo. You know what I'm saying? Like, they don't have a cross-pollination of shows like that no more, you know? So that's what I do miss, you know, because they make light of this East-West thing, but it was a lot of East-West love, too. It was a lot of groups that didn't get involved in that. And didn't play off of that because, see, that's what the media wanted. They wanted to see us warring with each other and doing that, because if we warring each other, if we warring with each other, then they know where we at. You understand? They know we warring with each other, so they ain't got to worry about us coming outside the box. So those, you
right.
know, with mm-hmm. us, man, we blended. We done shows with Brand Nubian, Ice Cube, and maybe De La Soul. You know, I miss those type of mashups.
And you know
yeah,
what,
man.
Too, man, it's just like at the end of the day, the reason I think y'all really mesh together because y'all respected each other's skill set.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Each person brought a certain flair and certain style to it. Pooh-Bah was swift with the words. You know, Jay was definitely good with the mathematics and the 5%. I think I came off with the cadence and off-pace style. So it all blended and weaved in well, you understand, and it made it a different type of dynamic at the time.
When you all came with Once For All, it was a groundbreaking debut. Easily, and we hate putting numbers because we think they're such fluid metrics, So we actually say that your debut was one of the greatest hip-hop albums ever. We cannot talk about Culture without mentioning that project. Did you all know what it was going to do when it did in terms of the impact it would have and the popularity that would come from it?
Well, we felt that it would go with the times. See, it was in this country, it was a time of black awakening at that point, man. You had a lot of cases of brutality where black people were starting to make another stand. They were starting to feel that culture again. Public Enemy was out. You had certain movies, Do the Right Thing from Spike Lee and movies like that.
Yeah.
So it was all of that tied in, the whole culture from the music to the movies to wearing the beads again and actually having an appreciation and a love of black pride, man. It was all tied in that area, in that era, man. That's what made that era so special.
Dude, when you talk about
y'all was bringing
era,
the God Body, y'all was bringing the God Body 5% to the equation where nobody really heard of that. Because, you know, people looking from the South, it sounded very foreign, but at the same time, y'all made it sound so fly. And we end up having, like, okay, we want to look up on these lessons. You know what I'm saying? Like, so y'all, the key is to make knowledgeable music also listenable, and you guys did that.
Yeah, but that was definitely in the blueprint because, see, we knew that we couldn't just come out with straight lessons. You know, what's today's mathematics? What's today's mathematics and the knowledge culture degree? What's today's mathematics and the knowledge understanding equality degree? So, you know, we had to make it attractive and in a way that people can understand because we wanted the message to get out there. So we had to rhyme it and formulate it in a way that you can understand. We had positive songs on there. We had party songs on there. You know, it was and that was just life. You know, we wanted to base the album off of life.
One thing about it, X, is that your excellence in education and being an MC is not just limited to, you know, being a rapper. I mean, you are a teacher, which me being a former educator myself, we definitely understand how important it is to teach the babies and, you know, give them those lessons, especially our, you know, African-American children, our Latin children, because we're all, any child of color, but all children across the board, giving them that attention, that academia, and most of all, letting them know that we genuinely care. I mean, you coach basketball, you qualified as a fighter. What talents do you not have?
Hey, well, you know, like coming up, especially that was in one of the lessons in the 5% Nation that the Father of Law left. He was like, you always seeking and you always learning. And I think that's what has kept me in this game and what has made my love for hip-hop continue. Because if you notice in certain songs, I talk about the kids. You understand? And anybody who's ever been an educator knows how hard it is to work with these kids. Because, see, I taught hip-hop programs. You know, and I had to learn on the fly, man. And I had some great teachers that kept me because those first couple of days is nerve-wracking because anybody knows if you teach in the class and you come in and you're not ready, them kids know. They know within the first 2 minutes of you coming in the class whether you're ready or not. And if you and that's when you lose them. You lose them in the first minutes in the classroom. So I had to learn that. You know, I'm teaching hip-hop. You know, I'm thinking I'm going to go from A to B and we're going to start at the Cold Crush and we going to go all the way up. Nah, it didn't work that way. I had to spoon-feed them the Cold Crush and spoon-feed them Brand Nubian, but also give them doses of the Migos and doses of this group and NBA Youngboy and all these other groups. I had to make a mixture, man, and that was so rewarding. And that was probably my hardest challenge, harder than rhyming, way harder than rapping. I might have been more nervous doing that than performing in a stadium.
Yeah, man. Go ahead, King. Go ahead.
Yeah, because I was going to say, too, here, yeah, because it's like a different formula, you know what I mean? It's like you jumping in a different realm when you commanding on the stage versus, you know, teaching the masses different origins of this culture. So it's like two different deliveries
Exactly. And you know, and my thing was even harder because I could understand if I was coming in and teaching a college level course, you know, a high school level course, I was teaching middle school. These kids I was teaching was 10, 11, and 12 years old. So imagine coming in the classroom and trying to beat them in the head about Bambaataa and this and that. Of course I got that in there, but I had to find a medium to get it in there, you know. And that was a challenge in itself, where I had to really learn how to make lessons plans, how to do point production, you know, like those point production. I can't think of it now, but like, I had to learn how to do all that stuff, man, like to really make that work. But once I found the medium in there, I was rolling. I rolled for 4 or 5 years. I had lesson plans for days. We'd come in, we'd have days when I'd let them rap and make up their stuff, and I'd let them bring a video to school, and we'd talk about the aspects of it. Was it real? Did it seem like this could happen? I told them, as long as it ain't got no cursing in it and you can explain to me what this is about, I'll let you rock. And we used to have a great time.
Man. I mean, X, you, in terms of what education is, in terms of being able, it's one thing in terms of disseminating wisdom, but it's also being able to have an ear for letting your students articulate their innermost feelings and thoughts, especially from a level of that self-expression. Sometimes as the elders, because we're all older, but we're not old, and we still have the same energy in terms of wanting the best for our youth. But sometimes sometimes some people miss the point that, you know, you got to talk to the kids instead of talking at them. Our nostalgia, our experience is not theirs because they have their own experience that's going to educate them in their life, which they have to live for themselves. But at the most, we just try to give them the proper wisdom and guidance of avoiding the traps, the trials and tribulations that may have ensnared us along the way. You know, that's the wisdom we gain from our experiences that we want to pass down.
That's a fact. You know, like in my class, man, it was like, if I was talking in my class, the way I found it most rewarding, that if I'm doing most of the talking, that's not good. I want to do a little bit of the talking to start the conversation, and I want the kids to talk the rest, and I'm going off with them. So, you know, I've seen, like, you know, teachers come in and try to teach hip-hop and try to go A to B verbatim, any subject, A, this and that, and we're going to go right here. Like, if you're doing all that talking, it's too much, because if you're doing all the talking and ain't nobody else talking, then that's not a good sign. A proper classroom is everybody engaged into the conversation. I start the conversation, and by the end of the classroom, the whole classroom is talking, and they talking, and we in an orderly fashion. You understand? No yelling over each other. Beginning everybody their mutual respect, you know. And I loved it, man. It was a great thing.
Dope, man. Now, because we want to put this in context, because it's also once, because we got a little bit of time, so we want to talk about in terms of how the game changed over the years. What years did you teach? Because we want to be able to, you know, talk about how the music was changing. Because we know we grew up on you all. You all are, yeah. So what years were you doing? What years were you active in education?
I started teaching. I taught from 2015 to 2019. So I taught for those years.
Oh, wow.
And in those years,
okay.
In those years, the musical was the emergence of the Migos, Tekashi 6ix9ine, being in Brooklyn, Bobby Smurda, you know what I'm saying? And Young M.A. was a big one, and Cardi, the beginning of Cardi B. So, you know, that was what I was hearing in the classroom. And I did my damnedest to make edits, and, you know, it was so hard to make edits to some of the songs to actually play, but I got it done, boy. I chopped it up like a surgeon, but it was hard.
Look, I mean, it's called being a doctor in terms of the dialogue, in terms of understanding the anatomy of the culture and the art. But when you saw, because when we all came up under you all, we saw where the music was.
Sure.
And we're seeing a situation now, and we are concerned at times of what we hear, because we see something, like you said earlier, where you really had to have some credibility in order to have a commentary in terms of the music. But also, too, it was not oversaturated from the levels of gratuitous brags. To get a video out, I mean, that was a big damn deal back in the day. I mean,
Definitely.
To get signed to a label is one thing. We're doing a video. Yo, son, we on. Yo, call on block. We on.
And you know what, to build off that, see, it's different when you have your songs on radio, but I want to ask a guy that this, man, like, how did it feel when you saw your joint getting played on Martin?
Oh, man, I was like, you know, and that was when Martin was still coming on prime time. You know, it wasn't no reruns yet. That was on prime time. Martin was coming on Thursday, 8 o'clock. So, you know, to actually, especially if you never had seen that before, the first time it aired, like, it was like, oh, my God, I got so many phone calls. And, you know, I just was in amazement. Like, you know, that kind of lets you know how wide and how vast your music has spread. And it was like, damn, like, I guess we really did make some type of mark, man, where somebody thought enough for this scene right here to use Punk's Jump Up. No question.
Man, dude.
No doubt.
I mean, now, In God We Trust, when that album dropped, was dope as fuck, man. But, I mean, when we heard that remix, Diamond D.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God.
Like, wow. We were like, oh, my goodness. I got to collect my thoughts here.
Yep.
Because that era of the 90s, we don't have enough hours in a day to talk about that album. I mean, you know, what y'all did with In God We Trust. I mean, Ice Cube with The Predator and Lethal Injection.
Oh, yeah.
Even throwing the soundtracks in. Yes, I mean, the Juice soundtrack, Boys in the Hood soundtrack, Menace to Society soundtrack, Boss, Born Gangsters. I mean, Big would drop in 94, Tupac Now, 1991, The Chronic, which was released today in 1992, Snoop Dogg's Doggy Style, 1993, Illegal, The Untold Truth, 1992. Dude, I told you it
enough. Yeah, well, you know,
we went broke.
You had to decide.
We went broke by
all right, I can get this album now, and I might have to wait a couple of weeks so I get some more money to get this next album. But it that goes to say, dudes was making albums, man. They were sitting down and crafting out albums. Where it was different from nowadays, you hear one of these kids say, yo, I did this album in 2 weeks. And I'd be like, yeah, it sound like it too. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The art
you can easily
today,
tell, too, with they Nixon D all off. That's a bit, that's a pet peeve within myself. That's a pet peeve for me.
You know,
like, you know, being a listener and being around studios, like, just hearing cats that, you know, boast about how all this bread they have, but they can't get their music properly mixed. I'm like, really?
Exactly. For real, man. That just goes to show how the focus has changed. It's become, I need to hurry up and do this so I can get this money or so I can get this and that, and as opposed to, let me make a right project that might can stand the test of time. And every now and then, one of these kids do make that, and you hear the difference between them. You'd be like, well, sound like this kid right here, somebody told him, nah, sit down and make something. At least make, you have these party songs and have songs that teach you something. Because now all these songs teach you how to do is dance. But, you know, have a couple of songs that teach somebody something besides, you know, going out and making this money or fronting or doing this. And, you know, like, you know, it's a different time.
Yeah, One thing about it is when we came up, we respected the craft of hip hop as emceeing as a sacred art. So we obviously were not going to do it unless we knew we had a passion for it.
Exactly.
When we see artists like, you know, Jay, when he would come into his own, we saw a young Nas on the Zebrahead soundtrack. You know, we saw AZ get on Illmatic in 1994. When we saw the Wu-Tang make their debut, I mean, these are life-changing. These are not only legendary artists These are culture-defining masterworks that will influence at least two generations. You all are part of this as well. I don't think you all get enough credit for what you all bought. You know, even through the, you know, breakup, solo, and then coming back together again, all of you, man, you know, Puba, you know, Lord Jamar, I mean, all of you, man, I mean, it's just something that era cannot be replicated. This is why this is such an honor for us, because to talk to somebody who we grew up and respected, all of you, I mean, this is special for us. When you look at the time of how the business was conducted, Sadat, in that era, what was it like in terms of record room meetings? What was it like in terms of marketing? What was it like in terms of even political correctness? In terms of what?
All right. Well, I'll tell you honestly, when we first came out, it was kind of so new still that we didn't really know the business like that, man. I'm not even going to sit here and tell you we did. We didn't know the business. Our first contract wasn't the greatest contract. We learned along the way. We didn't nearly get as much money as these kids are getting now. That's why I try to tell these kids the importance of, man, staying on top of your business, because some of y'all are making a lot of money, but it's going right through a strainer. Like you got all different type of hands all in your stuff. You don't know where it's going. Make sure you pay your IRS, because they're coming and they're going to get theirs one way or another, but they definitely going to get theirs. But as far as the business-wise, man, you know, you had more, I guess, like being that it wasn't such a mass concentration of rappers, you had labels that really could give you a little more push. Like you still had street teams, and you still made radio station runs. I guess they make them nowadays, but it's a lot different. That's a dying breed. But we still we hit the promo trail. Like you had people from the artists that from the label that came with you. Whereas now you don't even really see that many labels anymore. And it's like everybody is doing it themselves, man. And it's a yin and a yang, man. You know, it's creating more opportunity for people, and it's giving people more money, but it's diluted to me some of the music, some of the passion, and some of the feel of the music.
Yeah.
Now, what is it that you totally dislike the most about this era, social media era?
The loss of interpersonalness, and especially with some of the young men at my school when I used to teach them. First of all, I would make them put their phones away. And, you know, by you using the phone and always having your head down, subconsciously that does something. Because when I used to talk to these little young boys, these young men, I used to be like, when I'm talking to you, you look me in the eye. A man looks another man in the eye. You're a young man. And you, when you talking to another young man or you talking to me, look me in the eye so I can know you understand and you can know I'm understanding. You know, a lot of these kids would talk, their head is down, and, you know, and that was a real pet peeve of mine, especially for my young men, because they already was trying to break us in this country. There's no reason for us to be walking around with our head down. When you talking to another man, you look a man in the eye.
Absolutely. One thing about it, and this era, in terms of how social media is, we're seeing a situation where now there's a psychological tie-in that is not the most authentic. You know, everybody on social media, to see them, they got money, they're rich, they lit, they got the, they're by the parties, they living it big. When we growing up, look, having a beeper was one thing. Hey, we know how it was back then. If you was really out there, you had a cell phone. Oh my god.
Oh yeah. That was serious business.
Oh, you was the man.
The Motorola with the illegal chip. My old
The flip phones. Yeah, definitely.
Man,
definitely.
But now it's become social media. Now, y'all, has become a false barometer of artificial metrics. Everybody is trying to live through it and not living their life in the most authentic. But one thing about it is You can't run from where your reality is, no matter much you try to frame a picture of what you want everybody to think your reality is. The colors are still going to be painted in candid shades.
Oh, yeah.
Either they're going to be vibrant or they're going to be dull.
They're
going to be pastel
or
they're going to be, you know, a rainbow. But it's going to be a reflection. When you see how social media has dominated the game so far, you all came up in a time where the music spoke for itself. Now it's about what image that can we present that is going to make the most money, where back in the day it was cool to make money, but the music was a priority first in terms of making sure that the product was immaculate because this was your branding. This was who you know, like Matt said,
I was going to say this. I didn't mean to cut you off, but I was going to say this too.
Go ahead.
I think to also add on to what you were saying is that another thing that I hate, and you know, we all come from this era, is the sensitivity amongst people these days. Like, people are so damn sensitive.
Man. Oh, yeah, man. The little things, definitely.
And I remember I was on Stoddard's page a while back. I think it was coming at you, right? And I'm like, dude, you realize this dude from Brand New? He don't give a fuck what you say. You know what I'm saying? Care about your outrage.
No question, man. It's like you said, man, the sensitivity, man, just overall with these kids, man, it's like they know how to do all this, 'cause looking at this computer stuff and this and that, but like I remember I had a bunch of these young men in my class, because I always took the young men because they was the ones that I needed to reach the most. Like, you'd be surprised how many of these kids nowadays can't cook, can't keep a home, like don't know the simple skills for survival. They know how to do this phone, but if I take this phone away from you, you can't survive. You can't eat. You understand? You don't know how to make anything to eat. Like, it was a kid in my class, he said, my mother makes me cheeseburger. I don't really know how to make. I said, you don't know how to make a hamburger? I said, oh, man, like this skill. Well, I told him, I said, listen, when I used to go to my sister's school, pick my sister up, bring her home. If my mother and father wasn't home yet, I knew enough to be able to work that stove and cook on that stove. My people trust me. Where I could have a meal, she would be bathed and her homework done and in bed, and I would be the same all before my peoples came home if I had to.
Man, look, man, between that era of you growing up and us, you know, growing up, I mean, look, we was living a dangerous life and we didn't know it, riding bikes without the helmets on, drinking
exactly.
out the faucet.
Really?
look, I'd be outside,
my mother wouldn't know where I was at for the whole day, but she knew, listen, when it started getting dark, start making your way home. You know, she knew I was out here playing somewhere, but she didn't know exactly where at, which is now the way this world is working, it's crazy, man. Like, I couldn't leave my daughter outside like that all day.
Nah, and it's wild, man, because shout out to my man Kenai, you know, went to Indian River High School with one of my lifelong friends. Me and Kenai were having a discussion, this was years ago, and we were just reminiscing on the old school days when we were shorties coming up, and we were just talking about how, you know, things were carefree for us, you know, but when we look at how things are now, you know, the guns back in the day was something that, as the game started to change, when the block started to bubble on the hustle, you know, with that white and that green, that brown, the guns didn't come out unless there was a real situation. I mean, if you had...
Exactly.
I mean,
it was something real that, like, I tell people, not to cut you off, like I tell people,
no,
they came out, but when they came out, it was a serious thing. Like, it wasn't just a casual shootout, this and that.
No.
When it came out, you knew something had went awry.
Exactly. And see, and I mean, you know, I mean, look, we got to break down the history of this in terms of, I mean, back in the day.
Hey, T-Mac, hold on one second. Then we got Pat on the line. Pat, what a hop.
Pat,
you on the line, bro?
Yes, sir. Thanks for letting me on real quick. What's
going on, Pat?
Man, I just had like I had a crazy, chaotic night, man. I just lost track of time, but I don't want to step on the interview or nothing or ruin a good conversation,
you're good.
But you know, everybody knows me knows I'm a New Orleans head and I'm an East Coast head because I live on the East Coast. I grew up on the East Coast, and to Dot X on the line. I mean, man, I got a long list of legends that I interviewed. And Sadat was always on that list of people I needed to interview, man, because, man, I don't even have to say why. We know why. Man. So I just wanted to salute you, Sadat, because I actually
Oh, I appreciate
it, like,
brother.
Yeah, I mean, bro, for real, like, you can ask these guys, man, like, I'm a true hip-hop head, and if I say I rock with you, I mean that. We've had big names on here before of motherfuckers that I don't really fuck with, so I didn't say nothing, you know what I mean? But like,
I hear you.
I really do.
Stay a hip hop head too, brother. Stay that way, man. Don't make anything lose your passion, man. That's once you start losing the passion, that's when a lot of people get disgruntled with it. Keep your passion.
Well, you can even ask Eric, my co-host here, man. Like, I've had moments. I've been doing this for like 6 or 7 years, man. I got to interview people that like, and I just kind of fell into this shit. Like, I came home from prison, and I just kind of fell into doing interviews. And I got to interview people like that. I, you know, like the fact that like I have a friendship with MC Shan. Like, he called my mother's house before. My mom's like, "Yo, we're on the phone." I'm like, "Who is it?" MC Shan, like that.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
that
that's my man. And we all know Shan is a character. I love Shan. Shan is a character.
Oh, I would kill somebody for Shan. I love Shan.
No doubt. Shan, he's a boss.
You
he's a boss.
But what you just said, though, about being a hip-hop head, I actually have that actually kind of ties into one of the things I wanted to ask you. And I'll let you know who I think carried the torch a little bit, but from your era, from when you know, there was, you guys were about true lyricism, you were about knowledge, but you were also about making good music. And
yes,
a lot of times, that's the one thing that's hard to do. Like, a lot of times, like, there's a bunch of lyrical guys, a bunch of guys that have a great message, and they're talented as hell, but they struggle in, it's just kind of like they're just, you know, they're just rapping over a beat. They're not really making a great song. But you guys musically had it down. You had the knowledge where you actually, like, you learned from your music. Now,
that's a fact.
We all know
that's
that over time, that type of music was, they kind of tried not to let you guys through. You know what I mean? They didn't like the knowledge part of it, but. So, like, you know, we have the Public Enemies and Poor Righteous Teacher. Shout out to Wise Intelligent. A lot of great artists from your era. But after your era, when we had, you know, we went through the Bling Bling era and the G-Unit era, went through all these eras, and every once in a while someone that was kicking that real shit would slip through and stuff. But if you were really listening and looking for it, you could find a bunch of dope MC guys that I would listen to, and I would think like, oh, Brand Nubian would be proud of these guys. Like, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, and it's a lot to tell you, brother, when I do listen and I go through it, you'd be surprised. I find some of these younger people and I'd be like, damn, man, like, okay, all right, all is not lost. It's never going to all be lost. Like I said, you just got to dig. I tell people, it's out here now. You just got to dig.
Yeah, so after your era, who came after you that you think did a good job at carrying the torch that you guys had, you know, like, you know, carrying on the message and fighting a good fight?
One collective is like these is like my little brothers. Like, I seen them literally come up from high school. It's all of the boot camp, Smith and Wesson, Sean Price specifically. Like, I've seen Sean since he was in high school come up. So, you know, people like that, man, that really, J. Cole, another one I saw come up and
through his progression. Mm-hmm. You know, I've enjoyed his progression, you know. And the thing is now, it's just so many of these kids. I lose track of the names sometimes. And, you know,
yeah.
But those are some of the names that actually stick out to me, like J. Cole's and, you know, I like Kendrick Lamar. You know, sometimes I don't get everything that he says, but, you know, he does make music with a message and music that make you think. And that's mm-hmm. where I'm with, man. Like, you know, too much of this, that's why I don't really sometimes listen to too much hip-hop. I'm more on maybe listening to rare grooves and beats and blues, and I go through my James Brown phase every now and then because I play somebody at work. I work in the daytime, so I'll play somebody and, you know, that's getting to the new album that I made. That's why I made this album under that. Like, I didn't listen to really nobody when I was making this album because subconsciously I didn't want anything to cloud my train of thought. Like I said, I wanted to make this album quick, like a nice, concise album that you could play. I don't believe that anybody has the capability. I can't listen to nobody make 23 or 24 songs. I can't listen to nobody that long. My attention span just, I don't care who you are. My attention span is just not going to last that long. But you give me a good 10, 11 songs that I can listen to and absorb, and I'm with that.
Well, I mean, I always like a lot of music. I love material stuff, but like the number one rule of show business is what? You always want to leave them wanting more. You don't want the listener to be exhausted by the end of the album, because by the end of the album it could be your best song, but they're kind of tuned out by then. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And see, that's what I try to tell them. Yep. Exactly.
Yeah. You know, like all the songs might be great, but to listen to the same thing like over and over. I mean, just like a comedian can be funny, but is he going to tell you jokes for 6 hours? Like, nah, you know what I mean? But
exactly.
Me being an actual fan of you guys actually led to, I thought you were going to say these names, but Jamar had a big part in these guys' career, but Dead Prez. I felt Dead Prez.
Okay, definitely Dead Prez. Definitely Dead Prez.
You know?
Definitely.
And through them, I like discovered dudes like Saigon and...
Yeah.
Rex, I don't know if you know Rex from Massachusetts.
Yeah, I know you're talking about, definitely.
Great MC. I'm like, you can sit here and name a million people and everything, but I love the fact that, you know, when I came home from prison, I did eight in state prison and two in federal prison. You know, I was gone for like 10 years. And I came home and I was hearing newer stuff from, you know, Dead Prez and Saigon and, you know, guys like that, and I it was refreshing to, like, you know, like, I heard, you know, Poor Righteous Teachers in them. I heard Brand New
yeah.
and Public Enemy in them, and I was happy that, you know, the dopeness that you guys had back then did translate into this era. It's just nowadays it's, you know, another big problem, though, is, like, you guys don't make music for a quick moment. You make it forever. The things
yeah.
you guys are saying will be relevant for 50 years. I'm sure you
exactly.
could have gotten a booth and said, shake your elbow and, you know.
You know,
but the shit you were spitting is relevant forever. It's timeless music. And I think that that's the best way to be, you know what I mean? But before I sign off, man, like I was saying about how I have like a friendship with MC Shan. Yeah, I've been doing this a long time, and a lot of dudes I grew up idolizing and shit, I ended up meeting them, and I was let down, like the whole don't meet your heroes thing, but
always... that's the worst, and that's why I swore never to be like that, man, because, you know, like, I would never, you know, because it's been a great road for Brand Newbie and a great road for Sadatex. But it's been hard, too, man. And anybody who I feel has stuck in my corner, man, and given me love, that's the least I can do is give it back, man. I ain't never going to be that far ahead where I don't realize where I came from, definitely.
Yeah, that's what's up, man. But I don't know if this was already brought up to you. I assume it was. But over the years, man, there's always been a handful of guys that I continue to have a friendship with, kept in touch with, and anytime I needed an interview, they came on. And one of those dudes, was Granddaddy IU.
And, yeah, IU, good dude.
I want to, real quick, I just want to give a shout out to his family, his bro, Sincere. You guys know how to reach out to him if you guys need anything. IU was a great dude, a great MC. And like I was on a different show before this, and he gave me a great interview then. And when I came on this show, I was like, IU, I need you back, man. Like, give me a good interview. He came right on, had a great show with us. You know, he was a great dude. And you and him have, you know, you and him have a handful of joints together.
Oh, yeah.
Before I sign off, I was just wondering if you could maybe give us one thing that you're going to remember about Granddaddy IU. Well, it's how you
One thing I'm going to remember about IU is, you know, he always had that slow talk to me. He's like, yo, Dot, yo, when we going to do this, man? Like, when we going to get this album done, Dot, man? Come on, man. You know, like, I would have this slow laid back, like, yo, Dot, yo, what's up, Dot? I would always know who that was as soon as I heard it, man. He was, you know, me and him, we shared a drink or two together. You understand what I'm saying? We did a couple of joints. He was always the same person, always, all the time.
Man, I was shocked when I heard the news. And, you know,
yeah,
he was a great dude, man. And, I'm thankful that, you know, I mean, a lot of people were, of course, closer to him than I was, of course. But the one thing, like, I was always a big fan of his, man. And I had a cousin that was a big Nori fan, and I was like, man, Nori wouldn't be Nori without IU. And then years later, yeah. Nori said that. Nori said, yeah, like, my style was Biz and IU. And I was like, man, I won that. You know what I mean? But
yeah, no question. That's
I was glad that he at least knew that I was a genuine fan of his. Like, you know, I knew his music. Like, he would start off a line, I would finish it. Like, I knew his music.
That's dope.
So I'm thankful that I at least, like, you know, he had no question in his mind what he meant to me. And that dude was a legend to me. He always will be. And
no doubt.
You know, I'm going to go ahead and sign off. I'm going to let you guys get back to your interview. Thanks for letting me come on. Sadat X, man.
It's a pleasure. We love you, man. Thank you.
True pleasure, Sadat, man, for real, man. True pleasure. You're an absolute legend, man, for real. You really are, man.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate it.
Y'all have a good one, man. Y'all take care.
All right,
guys.
You cool, man.
Yep, peace.
Man, I mean, but that's what it's all about, though. I mean, shout out to Pittsburgh Pat, man, who has done so much for us on this show in terms of helping us with guests and just being an all-around great individual. When you think about it over the years, you come from a very distinguished class. When you look at how a lot of your brethren now, male and female, you know, all the sisters in the culture, brothers and sisters in the culture, you... rapper, actor, movie director, sports league owner. I mean, Queen Latifah, rapper, actress, talk show host, Ice-T, you know, Grammy Award winning, actor, rapper, you know. I mean, to see all of you to just doing so many great things and still contributing, still aging like fine wine, being distinguished, being, you know, how does that feel to know that, you know, so many of you are thriving at this over 30 years?
It feels great, man. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, just go. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, man. It feels great, man, because, you know, that lets you know, like, you know, we still here, man, and we made a difference. And then to see all of us doing this, it makes me feel a little sad, too, because there's a lot of us, man, that's not here. Like, if we notice, you know, I work in a hospital, man. I'm a sterile processing technician. I got to go to work in the morning. I work in a hospital, man, and I see, man, like, you know, when I hear about, like, a lot of our legends dropping off due to, like, maybe they didn't have the health insurance or just not staying in shape, man. You know, as you get older, man, you see your mortality coming into it, man. And you every year it seems like we dropping off, losing people. And I try to tell my brothers,
the importance, man, of just getting daily checkups. You know, in sterile processing, I process all the instruments, colonoscopy stuff, stuff that we need, stuff as black men. A lot of times,
yeah.
You know, and a
yeah.
lot of times as black people, we don't like to go to the doctor, especially black men. We like, yo, I know what I got to do for my body. You know, I'll do this and that. And I'll be telling my brothers, like, nah, man, yo, like, go, like, it was a brother, a younger brother than me. He's about 42, 43. He called me yesterday. He was like, yo, that you work in the hospital, do I need a colonoscopy? I said, absolutely, my brother. I said, there's somebody upstairs right now who I wish would have got one 2 years ago. It's too late now. You understand? So to see all of this, man, like all this greatness is beautiful. And then it makes me feel sad for some of the greatness that we've lost. I mean, through K. Slade, through this COVID thing, Fred the God.
Man, rest
like,
in peace,
oh, my
Slade,
goodness,
man.
It's like, and you know, when you, IU, like, you know, that shook me to my core, man, because, you know, like I spoke to IU about a month or two ago, and it's like, it's crazy, man, it makes you, every morning, man, like it's made me be so more appreciative of life and just living it and taking every day. I used to be a person, man, that I would hold grudges and I would be mad at this and that. Since I've left New York and I moved down to Raleigh, it's gave me a little bit more peace of mind. I'm working and I'm waking up in the morning and I'm thankful, man. I'm thanking the greater power. Thank you for waking me up this morning. That was half the battle right there, me just waking up. Anything else I think I can handle now because I woke up, because somebody didn't wake up, you know. So it's this man taught me the importance, man, of life, man.
What made you get into
that, man?
Hell?
And we in the hello.
Me and Keith were both kind of at the same time about commentary. What made you get into the health field?
Yo, man, it was like, when the pandemic came, I was home. I wasn't really doing nothing, and I was down here. You know, I wasn't in New York. Wasn't no shows going on, really. And, you know, whatever money I did have, I didn't want to chop all my money off, the money that I worked hard to save, the mortgage money for the house or whatever. I said, what could I do, man, that can be challenging to me, where maybe I can make a dollar and maybe I can advance in? You know, so I started looking around, man, and I looked, and somebody told me to look in the health professions, and I looked at Duke Raleigh, which is 5 minutes away from the crib. You know, I got to be to work at 7 tomorrow. I get up about 6:25, throw my sweatpants on, take a shower real quick, and I'm there by 7. But, you know, I looked into the health field, and I saw this sterile processing thing, and I met somebody, actually. I was chasing a chick. I met a chick who did that, and I said, damn. She looked good. She's doing sterile processing. Let me go see what this is all about. And I went. I actually went to school for 6 months. Yo, it was all on the web, man. I went to school for 6 months, and I began to like it. Well, I've been there for, like 3.5 years, like another 2 years.
Wow.
I'm up for the first pension. You know what I'm saying? Like, in the music, you get that SAG pension, but you get that if you follow through for it. See, everybody thinks, oh, I'm in the music industry, I get this pension. No, you got to take the steps. Make sure your paperwork is in order. You paying, they taking out whatever they supposed to be taking out. It's just not you being in the music industry and you got a pension. Nah, it don't work that way. You know, so that's
right,
why I was at
right.
Duke. I'm at Duke Raleigh. You know, I'm in line for the pension. This is stuff that, you know, I wasn't thinking about a while back, and I got into thinking about that late, you know, just from running in the streets and doing this hip-hop thing, where this move down to Raleigh has been good for me, job wise and musical wise. You know, I'm always be in New York. I'm New Yorker through and through. But this time down here slowed me down and it made me think. That's why I think this album came out the way it did, and it's surprising me that so many people are liking it like that, because a lot of times you throw out something and you think that it's gonna be it and it don't be it. And I threw this out here and I felt, you know, people could get with it, you know, and I felt like it was grown man music, you know, explaining to people, like, listen, 90% of this world works. You know, you can believe all these videos and all this and all that you want to, but 90% of this world gets up and do some type of hustle. So, you know, that's how I've been.
And that's important, X, because the biggest trap everybody has in hip-hop culture, like we were saying earlier, is everybody thinks everybody's on, but nobody sees the blue collar working man and woman. And the reality, it's like with King and myself, you know, we love yeah. doing this show, but we work regular jobs like everybody else.
Exactly, and there's nothing, and the perception with these kids, that especially I try to tell them, I say, yo, man, it's nothing wrong with that. That's an honorable thing to work and come home and handle your bills and take care of your family. See, that's what a man does. When you become a man, you do things like that. That's what men do to take care of their families.
Yeah, man. And I think the thing now, when we see a lot of the foolishness happen on social media, is because you really had to do something of merit back in the day, being in the entertainment profession, to get on being known. And nowadays, you can just do something going, as they call it, going viral. And to me, it should not be the lowest common denominator of dumbness to get yourself out there. I'm like, have some dignity.
Yeah.
And you got some people
exactly.
will do anything just to get out there.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I'm like,
it's
no.
Bad.
Yeah, I'm like, you know, when we think about, I think this would be the perfect analogy, like what, you know, Nas did on Second Childhood, you know, and how you see a lot of, you know, older people still trying to get out there. And there's a difference between being comedic, because we can appreciate good comedy. I mean, hell, we were raised on Richard Pryor, Red Fox, Bruce, Eddie Murphy.
Mm-hmm.
So we know comedy, you know, but it's some things that even then it's like, this ain't comedy. You know, this is just the work, and I'm going to go there. To a degree, especially with us black people, some of the stuff we see out there is really nothing more than a caricature, which are the worst stereotypes of us being put out there, us, you know.
And I'm like, more than that. Yep. It's sickening. There was like one thing that was sickening to me, like that, how they did, like, when, which really disturbed me, is they had a meeting with Bobby Shmurda one time. I guess he was getting ready to get signed to a label. And
you're
they had
about
him
dancing
on
the
table.
Dancing,
I was like, what the hell? And they're happy. And then 50 years from now, that's going to be looked at the coonery of today. I'm like, yo, why? Who in his camp? Somebody can grab him. Yo, get your ass off that table, man. What are you doing dancing on the table? I'm like, yo, come on, man. Yo, like, that's
we
like
don't dance on the table,
but
keep it off the camera.
I mean, okay, peace to the God with this, because what was it like back in the day when you all, what was it like for an average artist back in the day to get a record deal? What was the, how was the auditions back then in terms of how any artist normally got signed?
Well, for us, basically, if you know the story of Brand New Me, you know, for us, you know, Pooh-Bah had already had inroads in, you know, he was in the group Masters of Ceremony, so he already had an inroad in, and what happened was he was actually trying to help me and Jamar both get on. We were both solo artists, you know, so Jamar, we might be get 8 hours of studio time, Pooh-Bah do 4 hours with Jamar, 4 hours with me, and we was trying to work it from there. Pooh-Bah, eventually, we went to Jazzy J's studio, the great Jazzy J's Zulu Nation. We went to his studio on Allerton Avenue in the Bronx, and we made a song that sounded good. You know, people liked it. So Pooh-Bah actually took the song downtown to a guy, Dante Ross. Dante Ross at the time was at Tommy Boy. He was like, "Hold on for a minute. I'm getting ready to move to Elektra, and I'm gonna get y'all on Elektra." You know, so. You know, that's how we did it. But like I said, like I've seen from back, especially back then, like you might have to rhyme for somebody on the spot. And it wasn't like, you know, like a lot of times when I tell some of these kids, like when they be like, they rhyme, they spit, I'd be like, all right, let me hear something. And they, yo, all right, they start rhyming. No, hold on, wait a minute. Nah, it was none of that, yo. That's why one thing Pooh-Bah instilled in us, he was like, listen, if it comes to a time and I got to throw you under the light, you got to be ready, son. It ain't your first impression. Maybe your last impression, especially back then, like it wasn't all this computer stuff. You had to be ready to go. If you wasn't ready to go, and you didn't, and somebody didn't see something in you at that moment, you might have missed the door. So you know, it was always on, he was always ready. In New York, it was a feeling of love in that era. Like, it might be a brand Nubian session, you might get Buster stop by, or Tripping them might stop by, or you might stop by a Jungle Brothers session, or you might go to a Black Sheep session, or I've been in the Old Dirty Bastard session. The Old Dirty been in our session. So it was a camaraderie thing back then.
Man, and it really was about the talent back then. When do you think it started changing in terms of when it became corporate, where maybe the monetary value was valued over the art?
I would say it was shifting in the beginning of the 2000 years. You know, some of the 90s was a little sprinkling in the late 90s. 2000 years, it was trickling in. And I would say where it went totally haywire was maybe after 2010 or so. It was going crazy. Mm-hmm. Up until, but now, like, and especially within these last 3 or 4 years, it's gone totally out of control. Like, what we are propping up, the Island Boys and the Tekashi and this and that, like, it's you know, and
all
it's like,
brothers.
Yeah, like, they prop up these people, they throw them out to the wolves, they chew them up and they spin them out, and then it's on to somebody else. You understand? That's why, like, it's basically every year you get two or three people that fit the suit. If you can fit the suit, we're going to throw you in this suit, we're going to throw you out there, you get you 2-3 years of music, and then, hey, what you do after that is on you, you know? So, you know, that's how it is now, man. It's crazy how it is. But like I said, I don't hate on it. You know, these young boys and young girls, I say, yo, go do what you do. Just be smart with it. If you do happen to get a dollar, make sure you take care of it, take the proper steps, and then make sure you do something, if you're getting this dollar, to ensure that you can continue to get a dollar. Have a B plan and a C plan contingent, definitely.
Yeah, man. We see it today, and a lot of the young people, there is still an element of not understanding that this is like the NBA or the NFL. Not everybody's going to make it. You figure,
yep.
You figure on an NBA roster, there's only 15 players. NFL player, there's only 53 players. NFL players in the league are roughly about 1,696. You figure roughly any given year on a college graduation rate of seniors between three divisions, one, two, and three, 1AA, 1A, Division III, even in AIA. You figure there's roughly about maybe 2,000 to 3,000 players that may graduate any given year between all those divisions, and less than 2% make it to the pros. NBA,
yes.
You figure 29 teams, 15 players per team, which is roughly, if my math is right, around maybe a little under 400 to 300 players.
Wow.
So maybe five at the most. But it would be less than that. So when you break down those mathematics, you're dealing with an aspect of, especially in music, this is how far I go back with this shit in terms of what kind of prepared me for this, because I literally have every Source magazine from 1994, and I have every XXL magazine from 1997, from when they first started press to the present. So you break that down in terms of how many rappers, and of course King has a background in journalism.
Okay.
So when you look at it, we have seen all the artists from when they were profiled in Unsigned Hype of the Source. We saw Biggie and Eminem when they were in Unsigned Hype. DMX, rest in peace. Biggie, rest in peace. We saw Rick Ross and Jeezy and XXL before they got there. We saw Gucci and XXL before he got out there. We've seen Terminology in the Source magazine before he got out there. But we look at other artists who didn't make it, who may have had a buzz, but they didn't. And it wasn't, some of them, they were whack. Some of them, they weren't, but they never got that push.
Yeah,
and that's what
a
lot of these kids today have to understand. this music game is fickle, especially now in the microwave media era. And how distorted it has come, because we are not dream killers on this show, because we live our dream doing this. But the reality is, we want to tell the kids is, when you got kids talking about they want to be professional YouTubers and Instagrammers, we're like, no.
It's crazy. It's crazy. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Like, and the odds of that making money are less than, you know, are very slim. But like you said, it's about our youth today understanding the practical skills, cooking, just knowing how to interact with people, talking to them. It's
exactly.
Not enough to text. Call people. Go see them. You know, pick up hard copies of albums, of which if you do, we need to get those as well. You know, it's like, and that's another thing too, X, how do you feel about where music has gone digital, where hard copies are not necessarily being a priority anymore for a point of sale?
Well, I mean, it's sad for a music aficionado like me, because I used to enjoy getting the album or the CD and looking at the artwork on the cover and actually turning the pages and reading everything, the credits and everything. Now it's just so interpersonal. Like, you throw it out there and it's out there, and you look at it and you play it, and then probably somebody else comes out. You know what I mean? And you add it to your collection, but that physical collection to me was always the one. Man, I could go back, I could pick it up, I could look at it when I wanted to look at it. Man, I tell the kids, I say, yo, you missing a little something. I say, I got a lot of stuff. I can't lie. All your technology is crazy as fly, but you're missing that interpersonalness.
Yeah, yeah. And especially now, dude, do you realize how much some of those albums on eBay go for now that are out of print?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's where you got to go in and start scraping for them.
Yeah.
You can find them. You better get them. You better grab them.
Come over here and buy them all up. Boy, they buy all them albums and bring it right back to Japan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's just where the game is now. When you think about when you look at your new project and how you put it together, because a lot of times we're still the only culture, unfortunately, that tries to say that people, you know, that some of our legends are too old to do it, which we do not believe at all. We believe as long as you can still do it at a high level, you do it. When you see how your work still stands up with everybody else, how does it feel knowing you still got it? And who are some of the artists today that you really rock with?
Well, you know, it makes me feel good, man, because, you know, like, they didn't cancel you. I tell people, I said, when you listen to compositions and music by, like, Chopin and Beethoven, you know, those compositions is 200-300 years old. You know, then when you look at hip-hop in terms of the music, they try to put a cap on it, I say it was maybe 50 to 60 years. It's still chambers being created in hip-hop. You know, you still got some people that's still alive that was there when the very formation of hip-hop. So to put an age cap on somebody is actually kind of crazy. You know, like, I tell people, man, it's like people that I came up with, man, we still love hip-hop, and it's no off button. It's no button that says, okay, I'm going to turn it off right now, you know, and I'm not going to do that no more. So it is no off button, man. I just wanted to make, and chambers are still being made, and lanes are still being made, you know, so I wanted to create and still make me an own lane, a Sadat X lane, you know, a lane that's uniquely unto me. And I wanted to make a lane of, I will always stand on Punk Jump Up to Get Beat Down, on Slow Down, on 199 with Common, on the song with Biggie Smalls, on John Wayne Couldn't Even Stand the Rain of the Punk with the Beat Nuts. But I still have something new to say, and I feel that I'm still rhyming at a competitive, at a high level, man. So hopefully people will get that within this new project, man. Like I said, I get up, I go to work, man. I do this music thing, so hopefully it'll be appreciated.
Man, look, and we appreciate you so much, man, for still being, you know, active, for still being genuine, still being astute, still being an academic and a scholar, still being attentive, and always ready to be the most authentic.
No doubt.
But, man, yeah, man. Oh,
yeah, man, we know you probably got to wrap it up and head to work, though, man. But do you care to tell the people where to find the album and where they can follow you?
All right. Well, you can follow me on Instagram. That's Sadat, S-A-D-A-T underscore, Dottie, D-O-T-T-Y underscore. That's on the gram. And then, like, the music, it's on all the musical platforms now. You know, I had a lot of work with my partner, Doughboy. He's out of Cali, you know, a younger guy than me, man. They helped me put it together. Had a lot of help on this album from Soul, a producer out of Raleigh, Give Him Soul. Crisis out of the Ninth Wonder Camp helped me. Also who helped me was Rock Marcy. Rock gave me a lot of help on this, man. And I got a whole bunch of features. Jay Worthy, Young Sound. He got a Young Sound. Crime Apple, a TF out of L.A. So I wanted to spread it around, man, and you know, I was especially thankful to get Rock on there before, because see, it's coming into it's a good time for Rock Marcy. These last couple of years, you know, a lot of the styles that you hear that's coming out, he's the father of that style. And about 15 years ago or so back, I remember some people wasn't getting that style, they wasn't understanding it, and I said, wait and see. I said, yo, this guy right here, he got something, and it's good to see him getting his flowers now.
Man, to see him come
He changed the landscape over.
Yeah, he changed
the landscape, man.
He definitely did.
Yeah, man. But once again,
and I was gonna say once again, thank you for joining us, man. You know, I stay in Raleigh too, man. So if you're doing a show, man, I'm definitely gonna check in.
Oh yeah, man, definitely, man. You know, we'll chop it up, man. You know where I'm at now. You got my number on here, so I'm here, man. No doubt.
Definitely, Legend. Thank you so much. Just followed you on your page, TMaxNBA. Of Off the Cuff Radio. Dude, this has been an honor. You're welcome back anytime. We definitely need more of the history lessons from the God himself,
definitely,
man. We appreciate you. Yes, and thank you so much, man. Thank you. And you know,
no question. I appreciate y'all too, man.
Fight. Yes, sir.
No doubt, man.
Peace, y'all.
Hello.
Peace. King, take us out of here.